Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Mani Jahangiri, and welcome to Conversations with My Dog. I am the creator of Doga, yoga for you and your dog, and this podcast aims to bring dog lovers together to discuss the impact they have on our lives. Today's guest is Pip Thompson, an English journalist and presenter who is currently a news correspondent for Good Morning Britain on ITV Breakfast. She is a two-time Royal Television Society winner and a huge dog lover, doing amazing work combating the Korean meat trade, having two ex-meat trade pups herself, Bindi and Robin. Hello, Pip. Hello there. How are you? Welcome on the show.
Hi, Marnie. I'm good, thank you. I've got a dog snoring in the background here.
Is that because he's been watching the election?
he's snoring
out of boredom.
Maybe he was watching Good Morning Britain and was bored of Piers talking. Who knows?
I mean, they all seem a little bit similar, don't they? How are you feeling today, Pip? I heard you're very tired, so we're going to make this a bit more exciting today.
I am a bit tired, but I always perk up when I come home and see my lovely dogs.
Exactly. This is what this show is all about. It really is about the dogs and what they trigger in us and, you know, what it is that keeps us wholesome at this very difficult time. I mean, we are in, you know, a lockdown. And again, it's like Groundhog Day. I call it Ground Dog Day. Forget the hog.
Very good. Ground Dog Day.
And in the middle of an election in the US, and it seems like no one can make up their minds or everybody's suing each other. So it's a lot of tension. So, you know, first of all, I just wanted to ask you, have you ever done yoga before, Pip? Do you know about yoga or doga?
I've done a little bit of yoga before, and I had a tiny taster of doga with you a few months ago, which was quite fascinating.
Yes.
I can't pretend I completely understood it, but I believe there's something to it, definitely.
That is wonderful. So we can just skip the whole conversation now because you just confirmed doga is amazing. Now, we are going to do a tiny little meditation at the end, a little yoga breathing with music, just to let you know. But before that, where do I start with you? I don't know where to start because I found you, I heard about you through Humane Society International, through Wendy Higgins, and a lot of dog lovers spoke about you. And they kept saying, oh, you must speak to Pip Thompson. She has two dogs, rescue dogs from the dog meat trade. And this is what I'm all about because I do International Doga Day each year on June 21st when Yulin starts. And I try to do a yoga doga campaign against violence. And everybody kept talking about you. And I was so, God, I was so in awe interviewing you on June 21st, which, oh my God, was this year. I can't believe it was this year. It feels like it was last year. Everything's so confusing. It was this year, wasn't it? Was it this year?
I don't know
what day it is. Wow. So the first thing and foremost, what is your background? Can you tell me a little bit? Are you, first of all, a journalist, reporter, or broadcaster journalist? What brought you into all of this? Yes.
Well, I'm everything that you just said. I trained as a newspaper reporter when I was 18 years old. I left school and I got a place on my local newspaper's training course. I didn't go to university. I started working when I was 18 and I always told myself as I started on newspapers and then I went into broadcasting, into television, I always knew that as soon as I was in a position to be able to do so, I wanted to get a dog, because I'd had dogs when I was a child growing up. And when I was at work, you know, on newspapers, on doing the TV, if ever there was a dog-related story, I would always be the one to do it, because I just have a natural affinity for dogs. And, you know, some people go gooey over babies. And don't get me wrong, there are a lot of lovely babies out there, but I'm definitely more of a puppy person.
You just answered about five questions. This is amazing. Anyway, yeah, don't get me started with the babies. That's a big subject. But yes, but I wanted to ask, just to rewind. So where is home? Where were you born? Were you born on a farm? Were you born in a city?
I was born in York.
Wow.
I was born in York, but I was brought up in the West Midlands near Birmingham. That's where I went to school. My first job was in Wolverhampton, in the Black Country. And then I moved to Birmingham to work in television. And then from Birmingham, I went to live in the northeast of England, in Newcastle upon Tyne. And then I came to London. And then I've worked in London for probably the past 8 years.
Right. How old were you when you arrived in London? I'm trying to gather how many years did you spend.
Personal questions.
I'm joking.
I was, when I started working in London, I was 34-ish. 34, 35.
So I'm just trying to reflect. You had a long, progressing career away from London.
I trained as a journalist. It's exactly 25 years ago that I started training as a newspaper reporter.
Incredible, because I'm from Switzerland, and I came to London when I was 19 to study musical theatre, and I left Switzerland, the country of gold and honey and chocolate and all this stuff. And I just wanted to compare, because I was a child when I came here. I was innocent. I had no idea of anything. You know, I was straight thrown into a musical theater course with a lot of men that were trying to come out. And I mean, everything was so confusing, so large and so expansive. London was too big for me, you know, big shoes, you know, to step in as a little innocent Swiss little Heidi, you know, from Switzerland. So I just wanted to compare. So you already had quite a lot of experience before you came into London. You know, you were all set up and, you know, mature.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I'd got a strong background in journalism and broadcasting, yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And talking about strong, I saw your interview with Piers Morgan on the Dog Meat Trade. You were ready to bite his head. You were ready to bite his head off. Literally, the guy, I mean, you look so kind of sweet and innocent. And then suddenly you just jumped out of the seat and you went, right, do you understand what we're talking here? I was so shocked, because everybody else, there's Anthony, and they're all staying very subdued and politically correct. And you really literally leaped out of your high heels and you were going to go for his throat. Is that correct? Or am I imagining this?
Well, not literally, but I think we've all got our passions, haven't we? And causes that we are particularly vocal about. And one of those things for me, ever since I can remember, was about the dog meat trade. You know, I remember as a child reading about it, but not being able to read about it because it would upset me so much. And then the stars aligned, you know, a few years ago when I ended up getting my own little rescue dog from the dog meat trade, which was, you know, best thing I ever did.
And can you take us back to that time exactly? How did it happen? How did you get the chance to go to South Korea? Is Bindi, Robin, part of the rescue team that from South Korea? Is this connected, or is that a different rescue?
No, they were all rescued by Humane Society International. But the order in which it happened was, I read big newspaper feature, special investigation, and it was in the Daily Mirror, and it was about the dog meat trade in South Korea. and I couldn't stop reading it. And in the article, it said that Humane Society International had shut down this dog meat farm, had given a farmer a grant to set up in another business which didn't involve animals, and the 100 and something dogs that they'd rescued, some of them were going to come to the UK to be rehomed. And so immediately I thought, right, I really want to give a home to one of these dogs. Being very aware that, you know, I knew they would need quite a bit of rehabilitation, a lot of TLC, but I'd already got two dogs at home, so I knew that that would help. So I got in touch with the charity that was rehoming the dogs when they arrived in the UK, a charity called All Dogs Matter.
Which is so funny. What a coincidence. We just interviewed Ira from All Dogs Matter.
Yeah, Ira, yes. Yes, well, Ira knows all about this.
Yeah, All Dogs Matter is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, they're involved in everything. I think Ira would rehome her own husband if she could. Like, she would rehome anything. You know what I mean? She is the rehoming lady. She never says no to anything. So tell me, so this is the moment, right? So you went, did you go to All Dogs Matter, to the office to collect, or did you go to the kennel?
I got in touch with them, and the dogs had been over here for a few days. Already, and I think some of them might have already been rehomed, and others I knew that were maybe, you know, a bit too big for me, but there was this little, and there was this picture of her in the Daily Mirror, a big picture of her in the Daily Mirror, not just a postage stamp, and she was a little white Chihuahua cross, I guess you would call her. She's definitely got Chihuahua in her, got a little bit of Spitz in her. And I inquired about her, and she was one of two or three dogs, I think, that hadn't been rehomed. And they said that they thought they might struggle to rehome her because people saw her and expected, you know, a little handbag dog. Bindi's many things, but she's not a handbag dog. And was very nervous. So I thought, right, she might be, you know, ideal for me. She's a dog that I can really help. And if she's not going to get rehomed very quickly and going to end up in foster care, then I'm even more keen to give her a home, because the last thing you want with any of these dogs that have had the most horrific existence anyway, the last thing you want is for them to come to the UK and be in a dog shelter for weeks on end.
Absolutely, that will happen.
So, yeah, and I think she was struggling to cope in the kennels. So she was just being moved into foster care. So I said, all right, I'll go and have a look at her. So I took my mum and I went to see a wonderful lady called Sonia, who was fostering her. And she answered the door to me, and in her arms was Bindi, or Poppet, as they had called her then. And she was just the most timid, sensitive little dog. I mean, you know, proper shaking. And there was another dog actually there as well that had been rescued from the same farm that had also gone into foster care, but was a little bit more confident than Bindi. I went into the house and I sat on the floor, and all she would do was just keep running under the table. I mean, it was like she was almost feral, to be honest.
Yes. Do you know the background? Do you know the background? What happened exactly, precisely?
I mean... Absolutely no idea. Some of the dogs, you know, might have been pets because they'd still got their collars on. With Bindi, it was very unclear where she'd come from. The weird thing was, and one thing I couldn't understand, is that they told me that the farmer had a pet dog that looked just like Bindi. But Bindi was viewed as a dog meat dog, and this other dog was viewed as a pet. Because they make that sort of distinction.
I don't know much about
her background. She was very young. She was probably about, I think she was about 6 or 7 months old, maybe. And she's, you know, there wasn't, I don't mean to be too crude about it, but there wasn't much meat on her. But I was told that she would have been probably used for some sort of soup or a health drink that they have out there.
A health drink?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, really? Dog meat is supposed to make Yeah.
I don't think we would sell that in Planet Organic, that's for sure. Jesus.
No. But anyway, so I just sat on the floor with this little dog and you know, bit by bit, over the course of about 2 hours, she started to work away a little bit closer towards me, but not much. And I was with my mom, and, you know, I knew pretty much straight away that I was going to have her. And so I took her home that day and brought her home, and I'd got two Tibetan Terriers, both boys, BG and Billy. BG, God love him, I lost a couple of years ago, but I had both of them, and I knew that they'd be absolutely fine with her. In fact, I took them with me. That's right, I took them with me. So they went in the garden with her, met on neutral territory, and I could see that there wouldn't be a problem. If anything, I could see that Bindi would be the boss dog.
Is she the boss dog? Is she the boss dog?
Yeah.
Still
very
is.
Very dominant. So, yes.
And when would Robin then come? Robin's much later down the line, or?
Yeah, so Robin came along over 2 years later, Robin came along. Yeah, so Bindi, I remember Bindi, I sat with her for about, I lay with her on the floor at my house in the living room for about 3 or 4 hours. And then eventually we had a breakthrough where she came up and snuggled in beside me. And then, you know, we just bonded. But it was a long process of her getting used to not so much household noises. It was really anything related to people. So I could put a new dress on, and if she didn't recognise that dress, she'd be terrified. And she'd wet herself in fear.
Wet.
Now, bearing
herself.
In mind, I might have had her for 3 weeks. Yeah, she'd wee. She'd wee herself because she was so scared. And it was almost, even though I'd had her for a few weeks, so she would recognise my voice by now. She would know the smell of me. She just completely, you know, couldn't cope with me wearing a dress she didn't recognise. So we had a lot of that. A lot of that.
How was it with visitors or going out? I mean, to take her in a lead, when was her first actual walk with you
I started walking her straight away. And because she was with my other two dogs, that really, really helped her. That massively helped her learn to be a regular dog. And she got used to walking on a lead very, very quickly. What she couldn't get used to was people coming near her. So what people would view as aggression wasn't aggression with Bindi. It was just terror. Particularly if it was men, and particularly if it was men in the winter, say, with hats, scarves, gloves, where she couldn't see their faces, she'd be a quivering wreck.
How interesting, because that's a common thing, isn't it? A common occurrence, men with hats. Or maybe with coats, something that they can't quite see. So the facial features are important to the dog, potentially.
Other dogs, you know, we'd go for walks and she's fine with them. I say fine, she can be quite dominant with them and she puts them in their place, but she's not scared of them.
How did you deal with other dog owners? Would she bark really loudly? Would she bite? Would she attack?
No, she wouldn't attack. She'd bark, and sometimes even now, if she's walking on the lead, she'll still bark. But if she's off lead, because I trained her off lead pretty quickly, because I always wanted her to be able to run off lead and be a regular dog, so I worked on, you know, the recall a lot. And off lead, she's a lot better, and she's ever so good. She comes back when she's called. She loves running in the hedgerows. She's a little hunter. She loves birds. I mean, she doesn't kill them, but she loves running after them. because I suppose off lead, she can run, can't she? If she gets nervous of something, whereas if she's on the lead, when people get too close, she feels a bit threatened.
I understand. You know, the lead culture—it's a nightmare, really, especially with rescues. I think it really doesn't work, and you have to be so subtle with the right lead and everything like that. Usually, I know straight away when a dog comes towards me, whether they're a rescue or not. And they're usually off lead. People understand that a rescue needs to be off lead, not on the lead, and certainly not around the neck, because it just creates more tension. And it is about the fight and flight, like you said, so they can run, so they feel safe enough to run away. But have you had any certain scary moments where you think Bindi might just, or has rushed off across the road or something like that? You lost her. Was there ever a scary moment?
I did have a scary moment. I'd been letting her off the lead probably only for a couple of weeks, and we were in some fields, and I looked around and I couldn't see any sheep or cows or anything. So I let her off, and then blow me down. 2 minutes later, what do I see out the corner of my eye but a herd of cows? And by the time I spotted them, she was gone. And I shouldn't laugh, but it was hilarious, because all you could see was a herd of cows crossing these fields with her in hot pursuit. She was having a great time.
How wonderful.
Panicking because I started to think, oh my God, you know, I'm going to lose her. She's going to get hit by a car because she'll end up getting out on the roads and get lost. I was terrified. And I went running over these, because she crossed about two or three fields with these cows. So by the time I caught up with her, I found the cows who were, you know, recovering, because she'd given them quite a run for their money. So I found them, but I couldn't find, she wasn't there. So I thought, oh God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? So I went back to where she'd run away from. And there she was in the distance, trotting along, panting, almost smiling. And she looked at me as if to say, my God, that was fun.
Oh, my goodness. If only you had a farm, she said. If only we could live in a farm.
I know.
Yeah.
We had a great time. Obviously, the farmer wouldn't have been very happy.
No, I know. And so anyways, it wasn't in Wales, was it? It wasn't in Wales, because they can shoot them, you know that.
No, it was not where I live. But ever since then, I've always been extra, extra careful about, you know, letting her off where I think cows or sheep might be. But that's really the only scary moment that I've had. And, you know, we've had the odd time where she'll go in a hedgerow, and again, she's having such a good time, she doesn't want to come back. But she's got like a little bell thing on her collar, so I can always hear where she is.
Yeah.
But she's very, very good. And I think the one thing that I notice with her is that it's only the people that she trusts, that she absolutely trusts, who get to see her true character. So that would really be myself and my mum and dad and my dog walker. And they see her, you know, happy and relaxed and confident, and she loves her cuddles. Whereas everybody else will sort of be a bit, oh gosh, she's a bit nervous, isn't she? And I'm not sure she'll ever completely lose that with people she doesn't know.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask. Do you believe that a trauma can ever be solved? Like I always believe that the trauma is so deep, you know, like with children, childhood trauma, you know, it never really goes. It's always in the central nervous system. Do you believe dogs can completely recover?
With her, I think it'll always be there, whether that's partly because she's a small dog. So because she's small, she's naturally a bit intimidated by, you know, what to her are giants, people. Or it might be because, you know, what happened to her was particularly brutal, because my other dog meat trade survivor, Robin, he is a cocky little, I won't swear, but he's a cocky little lady. Well, he's a cocky little shit.
Yes.
And you wouldn't think that he'd been on a dog meat farm and been through what he'd gone through.
Oh, you must tell me about this. Yeah.
Completely different.
So what's the story there?
He's a little horror. I think maybe he was freed from the farm a bit earlier than her, so maybe he was socialised a bit better. But from the minute I've had him, I mean, everybody falls in love with him because he is the cutest, most expressive little dog. Got such a personality on him. But he's nickname is Thugface.
Yes.
So on his Instagram page, it's Robin, a.k.a. Thugface.
Thugface!
Yeah, and he's just naughty. And he's confident with people. He's confident with other dogs. He tries to be... I mean, my brother has got a big black Labrador crossed with a border collie. Big, powerful dog. And he tries to dominate him and stalk him. And, you know, we've had moments where my brother's dog is a very patient dog, but it got to a point where my brother's dog lost his patience and gave him a good telling off. And Robin was so taken aback that he pooed himself.
Oh my God.
So I thought, right, that'll sort him out. We won't have any more trouble after this.
No,
but no, definitely. Does the same thing again.
Same thing again. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, he's a very determined little dog.
Do you know his background?
He was dumped outside a farm with his mum and littermates, I believe. Yeah.
In Korea, South Korea?
Yeah, in South Korea, yeah. Yeah. But I don't know much more than that. I think he was younger though when he was freed from the farm, younger than Bindi was. And I actually met him when I went out to South Korea.
Well, this is exactly what I wanted to talk about. Yeah. That's the part that
the second time I went out to South Korea, I met Robin.
Tell me about that trip because you were there.
Yeah, well, it was the first time I went was after I'd rescued Bindi. I went about 10 months after I rescued Bindi, and that was to do some filming for Good Morning Britain and yes. to do a piece about the dog meat trade, because so many people don't actually know that dog is eaten. And in South Korea, it is dying out. You know, less and less people are eating it. Younger people don't want to know. But
absolutely,
for older people, you know, it's they've done it for decades, been passed, you know, through the generations. But you know, things are changing, which is fantastic. But I went out there to try and expose what was going on and do a special feature for the show. So the
first time, upsetting, horrific.
Yeah, it was horrific. And nothing really prepares you. It doesn't really matter how many pictures you see or, you know, you can talk to people. I'd talked to people from the charity who'd already been out there. But nothing really prepares you when you first set foot on that farm and the smell hits you and the noise hits you. And then you just walk around. And on this farm I went to, you know, there was 170, 80 dogs. And it was just cage after cage after cage of dogs in the most appalling conditions. You know, there was a dead puppy on the floor under one of the cages that, you know, just left like a piece of litter. There was dogs that in this country you'd see in the show ring at Crufts, like golden retrievers. There was a beagle, an Afghan hound. And you know what beautiful coats Afghan hounds have got.
Yes.
You know, these were all terribly matted and just awful, awful, awful. So, yeah, it was just shocking. But the one thing is, you know, that farm you're going to, all the dogs are getting rescued.
Yes.
So, you know, to go to a farm, which I know some of the rescue workers have to do. Sorry, that's Bindi in the background barking. Some of the rescuers have to go to these farms and they have to walk away from some of them because the farmers might not, you know, want to sign them over or might not want to work with them. And that exactly. was being awful.
I mean, how do you convince them? I mean, Wendy is part of the negotiation. Wendy Higgins, she does the negotiating part.
No, Wendy doesn't do the negotiation. There's people on the ground, the charity out there who do the negotiation. And I've never been party to that. But yeah, it's you know, it takes some persuading, and once the farmers make that decision and they do sign the farm over and they get a grant to start another business, you know, they're so pleased they've done it, and I've heard stories about how the farmers will watch the rescuers come in and get the dogs out, and it's the first time they've really witnessed this, you know, this unique relationship that exists between man and dog, and they can't believe it because it's never been a relationship that they've had or thought about.
Did you have a chance to speak to one of the farmers or observe them or their faces or their reaction?
Did you
feel towards it? Did you feel compassion? You know, this must be a pinnacle moment between humanity, your human heart for, you know, for dogs, and then your heart for humans, which is what this show is about, you know?
Did I feel compassion? Compassion for the farmers? To start with, no.
Exactly.
I felt a lot of anger, and it's very easy, I think, for anger to be the first thing that you feel, because when you look around at the conditions that these dogs are kept in, and you see the vat full of restaurant waste that they're being given to eat, you see the fact that they don't even have a bowl of water to drink from. You know, you just think, my God, how can man treat any animal like this? So your initial thoughts is anger, but then you sit and reflect, and if they've made that decision to walk away from it, then you start to have respect towards them.
But are these poor people?
Because they're not, you know, they it's something that they've done for years and they haven't known any different.
Exactly.
And it brings us back to the argument of, my God, you know, look at how we treat sheep, hens, chickens, cows, you know, livestock in this country. Our farms, a lot of our farms aren't anything to be proud of either, are they?
Exactly.
So, you know, I think people have to think about that, that it's all right to be horrified about dog meat farms, you know, in South Korea or wherever, but we should always remember that the farms in this country, they're not great either.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I was going to say, how did you feel? So when you had that interview again, you went back, you came back, that Piers Morgan interview, was that straight after you came from the farm?
Yeah. Were
the feelings still raw, you know? And how do you feel in that moment? I mean, this is what I'm saying. I've done a lot of campaigning, and when your feelings are so raw, you know, you stand, your voice is heard. You know, you're bigger, you're louder, you're bolder when you speak.
But you've got to remember that I'm going on there to talk about it. I'm not going on there as a representative for the charity. I am going on there and talking about my experience of the dog meat farm and the dog meat trade. Yes, it's personal to me because I have dogs myself, but I'm not going on there as a campaigner for Humane Society International. I'm going on there as an eyewitness, if you like. This is what I found. This is how it affected me.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's a line that I have to tread. And what was interesting was, you know, Piers was very supportive of the whole thing. He wanted to talk about it. He wanted to do the debate on it. He was really fascinated by what we saw and what we found, and helping to, you know, expose what goes on and to make people think.
Absolutely, because they do say that he's a bit of a, you know, not a lot of people like to be interviewed by him because he can be a bit, how can I say, cocky or arsy, or we can say anything on this show. So I was just wondering how you felt. Did you feel defeat? I was wondering whether you felt defeat, because it must be so raw coming from this experience, then being interviewed, and then they come with the debate of veganism and all this. And again, let's not start talking about veganism, because it's a huge debate here. Huge, huge. I work for Planet Organic, so I can talk forever about vegan and non-vegan and all this. But he did have a point. He did have a point when he brought that point across. There's a huge debate about this.
I mean, let me just make the point that, you know, Piers Morgan, everybody says, you know, he's Marmite, you love him or hate him. But I've known Piers for a few years now, and he's a brilliant journalist, and he is a really lovely guy, and he'd hate me to probably say that, but he is. But he likes to create a debate, and that's a good thing. It makes people think. And for me, It did get quite heated, and we could have, you know, sat there for ages. And I think Pia said to me, you know, are you a vegetarian? And I was honest, and I said, no, I haven't been a vegetarian. But since going out there and having this experience, it's really making me, you know, think about it. And ever since then, I don't, if I've eaten meat maybe 3 times in the last 3 years, that's all I've done, because I'm on a journey with it, you know. And then people will say, oh, but you eat fish. And it's like, I'm on a journey, you know, I'm trying to do something.
And you can, you know, debate a lot of things with meat. Yeah, 100%. I like it.
Yeah. You know. It really has opened. It has opened my eyes a lot, and I now, I think the way I look at it is it's better to do something than nothing. And also for me, dogs. You know, the relationship that man and dog has is a very, very unique one.
It goes back thousands and thousands of years. About 30,000 years. They can find the first, I don't know, some guy from the Ice Ages, and was buried with his dog alongside his dog. So this relationship has been going for a very long time, which doesn't mean it's of less value if you love your pig and you're going for a walk with your pig. And you know,
Absolutely not. 100%.
But, you know, we all need to cut down on meat. I mean, we all know that going to Sainsbury's, that meat isn't, it's not okay. Because, you know, I work for Planet Organic part-time. Actually, I'm an essential worker at the moment. And yes, I do buy chicken there sometimes. I'm perimenopausal. I need chicken. I buy some chicken, and it's a completely different chicken, you know, that I eat. It is a completely different experience. And I do feel bad putting a chicken in the oven because I look at the body, I look at Robbie. But somehow I just feel better that I bought something organic and I spend money on it. And I know that this is really well sourced, that, you know, they do check.
Which is something, isn't it? Which is something.
It is, but, you know, it's a beginning.
I'd like to think, you know, maybe in 10 years' time, I might be vegan. I'm definitely taking steps towards it.
100%.
Definitely. And I have the utmost respect for people who make that decision, you know, not to eat meat or dairy, you know, total
100%. Respect. 100%. It's very hard.
Well, but, you know, it's like I got into a debate with friends in the pub the other night, you know, and you get into the, well, you wear leather. How far do you take it?
How far do you take it?
You know, it's such a, yeah, I know.
It's huge. It's huge. I bought myself a bag in Selfridges. I wish I could show you. It's so bright. It's like a neon, you know, yellow neon colored handbag made out of recycled plastic. It was quite expensive, actually, the plastic. But it's so cool, and I feel so good about it because it's all recycled. It's from Berlin. I can't. But it's all this new kind of hipster stuff that you can buy made out of plastic. You pay more. You pay more for this kind of fashion. But, you know, why not? A little bit more, something exclusive, you know. You don't have to go to H&M. Yeah. You don't have to. You just recycle your clothes. Anyway, I never have a date anyway, so forget it. I don't have to buy anything. I don't even know where to. I just very quickly before, I do need to tap on the Mr. Simon Cowell thing, because obviously listeners will want to know, oh, my God, Simon Cowell. I mean, I met him on Britain's Got Talent. I was on the Palladium stage with Robbie doing Doga, and he came up to me first thing, and the first thing he did was kiss Robbie, not me, kissed Robbie. He gave Robbie a little kiss, and he looked at me and he says, what's your name? And I said, well, I just told you during the audition actually my name. And he went, what's your name? And I said, Mahani. And he went, do you do yoga for a living at Doga? And I said, yeah, this is what I'm doing. I'm the founder. And he goes, do you do that with camels too? Can you do yoga with camels? And I looked at him and I thought, my God, you know. And he says, how do you see this act progress? You know, I don't know where or what planet he was on, but he was all about the animals. Is that right? Is he really?
Absolutely.
It seems like his heart is in the animals.
Because when I went out to South Korea the first time and to do the filming for Good Morning Britain, I was having conversations with peers and with my producers, and And we were talking about the fact that, you know, what would be really good is if I got a well-known face on board to do an interview about the whole issue. You know, somebody who was a well-known dog lover. And so I suddenly thought about Simon Cowell. So I approached him, and it was the easiest thing in the world to get him to agree to an interview about dogs and about the whole issue, because he completely got it. He's got, I think, four dogs. Yes, four dogs now himself. It was hard to actually sort the date out when he had time to actually sit down with me, but he was on board straight away. And when I did interview him, and I interviewed him, I think, about 2 days before I went to South Korea, and we sat down and I showed him photos of the dogs on the farm that I was going out to. And it was photos of the dogs that were due to be rescued from that farm and were due to come to the UK. So I had these pictures to show him, and I said, Simon, you know, these are some of the dogs that will come here to, you know, get a new life. And he said, I can't look at them. I said, what do you mean you can't look at the pictures? He said, I can't look at them. He said, I will just break down. He said, I just can't do it. And he would not look at the pictures. He'd talk about it, but he could not look at the pictures because he just found it too upsetting.
God, I wonder what would have happened if he went to the farm. Imagine.
Simon has been a fantastic voice, and, you know, because he's well known here, he's well known in South Korea, people listen to him. And he made, you know, some very good points. And he said, you know, you've got to remember, you know, these dogs would give their lives for you. That's the beautiful relationship that we have with dogs. They would give their lives for you. Look at what they can be trained to do. And yet they could end up and do end up in people's stomachs. You know, how does that? And he just puts it into such, like, he's so blunt about it. But my goodness, it makes people think. And when I went out to South Korea, we were in a shopping centre in South Korea, and they recognised people came up to some of the people from Humane Society International, and they said, because they've got T-shirts on, you know, and brandies, they recognised them, and said, oh gosh, you know, Simon Cowell, he's a big supporter of your charity, isn't he? And so the story of Simon Cowell doing an interview for us, Simon Cowell then donating £25,000 to help shut a dog meat farm, you know, that made headlines around the world.
It's and people incredible. In South Korea,
so it's a massive boost for the whole campaign.
Huge. Yeah. Everyone spoke about it that day when that interview came out. Yeah. Everybody, oh my God, Simon Cowell just giving money. Like, you know, I said, I tried to contact him so many times, his PA, and I was like, can you get involved in this, an International Doga Day, or maybe join the Doga, which he did on Britain's Got Talent, you know, do a little Doga. And it was always, I never heard anything back. And then I thought, but he must feel something. And then I saw this and I was like, yes, yes, he did it. I'm so glad. And I think they had a dog.
It was wonderful. And so
they had a dog on. Yeah, absolutely. And there was a dog on the last Britain's Got Talent that was from a dog meat farm as well. So he is continuing the his legacy, being, in a way, an ambassador for it.
Miracle, who was rescued from the meat trade in China.
It's incredible. There's so many things to do. And I was going to say, like, would you ever turn away from, can I say campaigning? Are you campaigning? Or What's your story with this dog? Will this be forever for you? Is there a day where you will stop talking about it?
Gosh, no. I mean, I'll always, no. I mean, I can imagine in the future I'll adopt more rescue dogs from the dog meat trade, I'm sure. You know, I think my one ambition in life would be I'd love to, you know, set up a charity related to it. I'd love to have, this is like my dream, is to have a small holding, and to, you know, when the dogs arrive here, I'd love them to come to me, and for me and a team to rehabilitate them and get them rehomed. You know, I'd love to do more, but I'm not in a position to do all that at the moment, so I just do what I can.
Exactly. And, you know, I was just wondering, you know,
I've you know, adopted two myself, and I've given them a new life, and I tell their story whenever I can, because they're now, you know, great little ambassadors for the dog meat trade. And, you know, they've enriched, Bindi and Robin have enriched my life so much, because when I see them so happy running off lead, and I think about what their lives could have been or could not have been because they'd have been slaughtered, it just makes me so happy.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We all know how a Christmas carol begins, but you've never heard it like this.
Marley was dead to begin with. Dead as a fucking doornail. Now, I don't know why a doornail. They've never had any life to begin with. But bottom line, Marley is dead.
A Christmas Carol, The Rude Retelling, read by Brian Harvey. Brand new podcast out now. Find it wherever you found this podcast or go to podfollow.com/Scrooge.
Bah fucking humbug.
It is incredible. It's just incredible. Leading on to this, and this is the part where I have some personal questions, but it's also, I'm going to share it with you too, my personal opinion and experiences with Robbie. But dating, how is there a man on this planet who will be able to share himself or share your love with your dogs that allows the love for your dogs to come first before him? Do you understand what I mean? Like, I find that, you don't have to answer your personal. What I'm saying is I find it really hard to date. I find it really hard to date because men have a problem with Robbie. Robbie's in my life. He's the only thing I have, especially during lockdown. My God, it was 24/7. We just have each other. And Robbie's very protective over me. And he is quite jealous. And I've noticed that most guys have an issue that Robbie sleeps in my bed. And it's not like I've got loads of guys in my bed, by the way. Just, it's once a year.
Explain to me, Marnie.
But the worst part is that he starts to dominate the guy as well. So if I have a romantic moment, Robbie starts getting involved as well. And it's just
maybe Robbie knows that he's not the right guy for you.
That's what I'm wondering.
Maybe Robbie's got a sixth sense.
Well, do you think they have it? And how is it? I mean, may I ask, has there been somebody or is there somebody or will there be? Or have you been in a situation where there was an entity of a male and there's an issue?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really private when it comes to my personal life.
Don't worry.
Hypothetically speaking, you know, my motto has always been, love me, love my dog. And that's would be the same when it comes to relationships and friendships, you know. To me, it's not even a conversation. So if I, you know, if I had a friend who suddenly didn't like my dogs and made it clear the dogs were a problem to them, I don't think we'd be friends for very long. Just the same as, you know, as if it was, if I was in a relationship and the dogs became an issue, I'd be like, see ya. But, you know, luckily in my life so far, my closest friends and relationships, yeah, they've always, they like my dogs.
Yes. And
you know, they'd be in my life.
Absolutely. But do you think it's a bad thing that the dog sleeps in your bed? Do you think that's a terrible thing? I mean, I don't know. I can't get Robbie on the floor. He won't.
No, I mean, God, no, it's not a terrible thing. It's sometimes it becomes a bit of an issue when you end up having no bit of the bed. I mean, you know, if I let my three dogs off the bed, I end up having a postage stamp to lie on. So that becomes a bit of an issue. And sometimes, particularly with Robin, my thug face, my real cocky little thing, he is very, he wants me to himself. So he can sometimes try and be a bit dominant with the other two if they want to get on the bed and he's already there. So in terms of sort of discipline, I tend to not let him on my bed because I have to be consistent and I have to be quite strict. And that applies, and actually I have the same issue with the sofa. So him and my other male dog, see, it's the boys, Marnie, it's not the girls, it's not Windy. they just get jealous of each other. And it's like their love for me or whatever, or attachment to me is, you know, very, very intense. And so they both want to be on me.
That's incredible.
So I have to sort of manage that. And in order to manage that, I have to be quite strict about dogs on beds.
Could you imagine bringing your three dogs to a yoga class then with a yoga mat? No, what would happen?
It would be
carnage.
It would be carnage.
You know, with other dogs as well. What do you think would happen?
Yeah, it would be carnage.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, one of them, maybe, but yeah.
Would you bring Billy?
About that.
Would you bring Billy or...?
Billy is probably... But yeah, I mean... Billy is brilliant, my Tibetan Terrier. He's nearly 12 now, but he is a teddy bear and he's just a very calm, placid dog. And I know, you know, they say you could never trust a dog with children, but I would trust 99.9% with kids because he just lives to be cuddled. And he's just a beautiful boy. So I could definitely do yoga with him. I could probably do it with Robin actually as well.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think with Bindi it would just be, see, the way I would do it is I would probably visit your space where Bindi is most comfortable and work within the pack with the yoga first, not introduce her Bindi to an unfamiliar space. But what, you know, you always have to, there's always a free fall for everything, you know, like any yoga class, you know, you don't know about it, you don't know what's going to happen, and then it works out at the end. I had a lot of rescue dogs in my yoga class, in my face-to-face, not online. I do online, but face-to-face yoga class, and actually most rescue dogs just hide. They hide behind the odor, or they lie near the door and they look at the exit. But, you know, it's quite sad because they never quite, they can relax, but only at the end, right at the end. Yeah. They always have to guard either if there's a window, they'll check what's going on outside, or if there's a door, they'll be as close to the door as possible. And they can't really enjoy themselves.
Billy wouldn't do that. Billy would love it.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah. As long as he's getting fussed, Billy would throw himself right into it.
Absolutely. And the whole idea is that it's their class. So basically there's a human class, there's a human yoga, we're on the mats, but we're not necessarily interacting with them. In fact, we ignore them first. So we allow the human connection and then the dog works him herself around the energy of the humans when they become quieter still, you know, with the breathing, which is what we're going to do, the breathing and the heart rate. And usually, you know, I always say a happy dog, a confident dog, is the dog that goes from yoga mat to yoga mat. and shares himself with other people who can actually move and doesn't have to hog the mat of the owner, which is so interesting. If they stay stuck with the owner throughout the whole class, there's actually an attachment issue with the owner. The owner is too emotionally involved with the dog. So it's very interesting to see. Yeah, it's fascinating. I love the ones that are just letting them off lead and they kind of just follow me and they do the breathing and the stretching and everything. And they giggle and they look. And the dog is pretty much finds his way and her way around people. And then eventually they settle on a mat and they get a belly rub and fall asleep. And that's it. That's basically doga. People always say, do dogs have to do yoga? No. Yoga is for humans. We imitate animal poses. The dog is the sponge.
The dog is visibly more relaxed afterwards.
100%. The best thing is, especially with rescues, is that their central nervous system can regulate because the owner is in a neutral space where their central nervous system is regulated. Because you must understand, when an animal has trauma, just like children have trauma, they are completely attached to you for every sign, for every smell, for everything. There's no separation. They're just one with you. That's with any dog or any child, two-year-old toddler. It's the same thing. There's no separation. You are their entity. Yeah, they don't know who they are, right? They don't know, I am a dog and I can do things myself. No. So they're, you know. So what I'm saying is, if you can influence, if you can calm down, their central nervous system vibrates, that correlates with their central nervous system. I mean, I still have to prove it medically. I want to get in touch with doctors and universities that can potentially, I don't know, monitor this process in doga. But I truly believe you can give a quality life to your rescue dog through doga, that to have that quite regularly as a not a training, a rehab, a part of the rehabilitation for yourself and the dog. So there's less attachment in a yoga class. You focus on yourself, the dog can be around you, and there's other dogs. So you're learning that little part of letting go. Yoga is letting go. And focusing inwards. Yeah, so I can go on forever, but I really believe that doga is for rescue dogs, most importantly for rescue dogs, and people with mental health issues as well. It goes both ways. So yeah, I hope that so doga will prevail.
I would have thought that if you're doing yoga and you're being, you know, it's calming you and you're being mindful and all this, If your bond with your dog is really strong, then surely that would rub off on your dog, because dogs are so sensitive. They know when you're low, when you're sad, when you're happy, when you're nervous.
100%. 100%. I mean, when I do my yoga at home, my self-practice, Robbie, he just sits on the bed and snores, but he knows exactly when I go into relaxation, shavasana. He hears my breath slowing down, and he also knows when the session is over. How does he know that? He gets up, he comes to me, licks my face, and wants to go for a walk. It says, right, well done, good practice today, let's go. How does he? It's incredible. Yeah. He's the yoga dog. You know, he doesn't do the yoga too much. I mean, he's in my arms, very relaxed. I got him as a rescue, and I didn't know he was so relaxed. I don't know how he became that relaxed. I didn't make him that relaxed. He was always this relaxed in my arms. He's a bit more nervous now as an 8-year-old. It's very different now in class. He's very dominant. He dominates the class, tells the puppy off, tells all the dogs that have fun in the class. He goes, rah, rah, and he sits between them. He goes, you got to listen. You got to listen to mom. It's her class. You got to listen, you know. He doesn't relax that much anymore in a group class, because obviously it's his class. It's his class. He needs to control the class for me. It's so cute. Yeah. But, you know, there's so much. And something that people don't understand yet, and I would like to explore in doga, is the mental health aspects in humans. In fact, I believe it releases oxytocin. It's just like mummy and baby yoga. Something happens in the brain to the owners when doing yoga and having a dog around. So it could be really, really powerful stuff for a part of a program, you know, maybe rehab, who knows, even in, you know, maybe psychiatric private clinics and things like that, that becomes a, not just a pet therapy, a human canine therapy, which goes both ways. And hopefully...
Well, dogs are great for your mental health.
100%.
They keep me sane, or as sane as I'll ever be.
To end the podcast, it's time to take a moment aside with your dog for some guided doga. Robbie and I will guide you each step of the way.
Just listen to my voice. So we have our dogs and our laps very slowly. And what we're going to do now is just focus on breathing in and out through the nose. So we can just focus on maybe massaging the dog slightly behind the ears as we're breathing in and out through both nostrils. And if you can hear my voice, I'm slightly contracting the muscles behind the back of the throat. So around the glottis, there's a slight contraction. So when you inhale, you sound like Darth Vader breathing. So the slow, we call it Ujjayi breathing, slowly inhaling. And then slowly exhaling. And the bigger the sound is, the more breath you're taking into your lungs. So you might find that your intercostal muscles between the ribs expand. So let your muscles expand and let your belly expand. And if your dog is there, place your dog on the belly so you can feel your belly expanding. And exhale. Inhaling. Exhale. Good. Now we're going to close our right nostril. We're going to take our right thumb and close our right nostril off. So we just close one nose and slightly blocked today on the left side, so slowly inhaling through the left nostril and exhaling out through the left nostril. Inhaling through the left nostril. Exhaling through the left nostril, just the left nostril. You should notice your mind become still. Five more. Expanding your navel. And as we come to the final one, inhaling. going to close your left nostril and exhale through the right nostril. You can hear my sinuses. And then switch. Close your right nostril, inhale through your left. Exhale through the right.
This is my nostril, isn't it? Not the dog's.
That's me. Yeah. Oh, no. Yes, yours. Sorry. Sorry. That is so funny. Imagine doing that. Joke.
Yeah, heavy breathing.
And one more. And exhale. And now just release and breathe through both nostrils. Feel a bit lighter. It doesn't matter if the dog is there or not, but oh, the plumber's arrived. The plumber's arrived. On that note, the plumber's arrived. No way. The plumber's just arrived because my central heater is not working. Jesus Christ, you see what happens when you do this left nostril breathing? Let me just open the door. Hi. Yes, I know. Jesus, is this happening on a show? Well, Pip, what can I say? What can I say? The actual plumber, they're going to give me hot water. You see what happens with yoga. So what we're going to do, I'm going to let him in, but we do have to finish. Hi, are you coming to plumb?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. I'm doing a podcast. Just one second. And so what we're going to do now, this is hilarious. Great entertainment. What we're going to do is just, yoga. So who wants to do doga?
I said, see if the plumber wants to do some doga.
Well, I'm sure he will. What we're going to do is just one last one. We're just going to finish with Om, our little Om for our dogs. So we're just going to take a deep breath. You just follow my lead, my voice, and I hope he doesn't interrupt my Oming. So taking a deep breath, inhale. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. And on that note, Pip Thompson, thank you so much. I wish you so much luck with your venture, with everything, with your love for dogs, with your heart, with your compassion, with everything. Thank you so much for giving your time.
I would be lost without my dogs. They do as much for me as I've done for them. So we're a great team.
You are. You will prevail. We all will prevail. The dog should run Parliament. That's what I think. That's the next step, really, honestly. Wishing you all the best. And I, especially with your big venture about opening this fostering rehab center, it'll manifest. It'll manifest. Just chant Om. It'll happen.
Oh, thank you, Marnie. It's been lovely talking to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Pip.
Thanks for listening to Conversations with My Dog. Make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button so you never miss an episode. If you're listening on Apple Podcast, then please leave us a review and a 5-star rating. It helps others to find us. And talking of spreading the news, please tell another person about the podcast and help us reach more people and dogs. We'll be back with another episode, same time, same place, next week. Namapaw.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.